Hi, this is Bob Sorrentino from Italian Roots and Genealogy, and I'm here today with Jennifer Anton, who wrote the book Under the Light of the Italian Moon. So welcome, Jennifer. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
No, my pleasure. And so you're not in Italy right now. You're in London, yes?
Yes, I'm in London. So we live in London. Our daughter goes to school in London, and then we have a place in Italy. Just on the western shore of Lake Como. So we spend a lot of time there. And then the rest of the time we're based out of London, but originally from Chicago. Joliet, actually.
Oh, the Blues Brothers.
Yes. Joliet Jake. Yeah. I forget about that, but yeah, absolutely.
I spent a lot of time in Chicago when I was working for Chase. And in fact, I went there six or seven times a year for a week. I love Chicago. Great Italian food in Chicago.
Phenomenal Italian community, phenomenal Italian food, absolutely.
So I want to talk a little bit about the book, but before we do that, I know you've done a lot of research into your family. So, you know, when and why did you start doing your research?
Yeah, so my research really started, you know, I think my interest was piqued back during the time when I was in high school, when I started to study World War II. And my grandmother had never talked about her time in Italy. I heard her talking on the phone in Italian to our family members, but otherwise she was acculturated to the U.S. to me. As a kid growing up, I never really noticed. And then when I started studying World War II, I kind of asked her, you know, Grandma, were you there during that time? And she said, oh, yes, I was. And then I started asking her about, you know, what happened in the town. And I had no idea until that time that the Nazis had occupied her town and all of the things that had happened to her family during that time. So that was the first time that I ever heard of the name of the town, Fonzaso, Italy. And I just kind of forgot about it a little bit after that. I mean, it piqued my interest from time to time. And then it was really 2006 when I was pregnant with my daughter that I decided I really wanted to find out more. And so I wrote down a large amount of questions into a notebook and intended to ask my grandmother in detail about all of these stories. And within a very short period of time, I had my daughter. I went into heart failure. A couple weeks later, my grandmother died. And thankfully, I recovered. But my grandmother never got to meet my daughter. So all of the research sort of kicked off then for two reasons. One, to go back and get the stories of my family. And then two, because I desired to get my Italian citizenship. So I needed to delve in and understand on that side of things how I could go about getting my citizenship. So it was really both those two things.
And that's interesting. You know, my family, you know, all my grandparents came in around 1915, mm-hmm. but my uncle Giovanni, Uncle John, we called him, he stayed behind with his grandparents when my mm-hmm. grandparents came. Mm-hmm. And I never got the real story. Whether I heard stories that they were going to send for him eventually, and then the other story was that they were going to go back, like many Italians did. Mm-hmm. But he didn't come back. He didn't come to the U.S. through Canada until the mid 50s, and so they were there in Torito for the war. Yes. And I talked to my cousin about it, who was about, I guess, about 10 or so during the war, mm-hmm. and got the stories about running into the fields when the bombers came.
Yes.
And they didn't have a lot of Germans there, but then eventually the British and the Americans came. And then also we got a little bit, my uncle didn't have to serve in the war because he had served before. And by the time the war started, I think he already had, I don't know, three or four children. So mm-hmm. he didn't actually have to fight. But, you know, we heard the stories about, you know, there's very little food and all of that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah,
a lot
that
of
is
polenta.
Quite interesting. And
a lot of polenta.
Yeah. Yeah.
At least for my family.
They were in the they were in the South, so they ate beans.
Okay. Oh, okay, okay. The difference, the North versus the South. Yes, no.
Yeah.
I mean, Fonzaso is right on the edge of the Dolomites, so it's very much, you know, it's very close to Austria. So Nazis did occupy the town, and it was very, very difficult times, very awful atrocities had happened there. So yes, but I'm Italian 100% on my mother's side, and it's my grandmother's side of the family that's from Fonzaso, but my grandfather's side of the family is actually from the Lake Como area. So hence why we ended up you know, purchasing a property there. And that's actually, it's quite random, but I actually got my Italian citizenship through my grandfather's side, even though he was born in the States. That was quite shocking to me. My grandmother, even though she was born in Italy and moved abroad when she was 17, I could not get my citizenship through her. And so I thought it was quite a closed door. And then, you know, somebody said to me, well, have you thought about going through your grandfather? I said, no, you know, that's not possible because he was born in the States. And they said, well, if his father didn't naturalize until after he was born, you can actually do it. And sure enough, that's how I ended up getting it. It took a long time. It took about 2 years. And it took a lot of research, again, into, you know, getting a lot of the marriage certificates and all of that. Birth certificates, death certificates, everything you could imagine. But it was worthwhile because it's what really allowed us to move abroad, live abroad, work abroad.
Yeah, I haven't done it. I keep thinking about it. I have a good friend who moved. She moved to Italy 2 years ago. She got all her citizenship and everything. I wouldn't have a problem because my mom's parents, they never became citizens. My dad's mother didn't. His father did, but he didn't do it until after my father was born. So,
okay. You know, so you're Italian.
I wouldn't have any problems at all. I've been talking, we were supposed to go and I had a thing set up and the person that's setting it up for us, we're hoping we're going to go this year. But she's in this big group of, travel people and, government people and all of that. And I said to her, you should work on the Italian government to make it easier for us to go. I said, because we'll bring our money, especially now because there's been no tourism, you know?
Yes, yes. Yes, absolutely.
So now have you done a DNA test?
Yes, I did 23andMe was the test that I did. I didn't necessarily do the DNA test though for genealogy purposes. I did it more for health purposes. I already kind of, felt comfortable. And we have so many contacts with our family already. Once I kicked off this process of meeting people, though, it was amazing how one person introduced you to the other. And certainly when you get on a plane and go to Italy, then it just becomes, you know, the town, what I discovered anyway, is the town just embraces you. And, you know, I was just dropped off from one cousin to the next. And if I didn't have a translator with me, it was quite, you know, I do speak some Italian, but it's very brutta. And so very rough. And I would eventually bring a translator back and then, you know, we would unearth how we were related and find out more. But yeah, that's really, I think, the best way of digging in is actually going to the town that you're from and then getting to know everyone.
Yeah. And like I said, we were supposed to go and I never knew. Torito, I maybe some distant relatives there, but on my dad's family, especially his mom, there were only two people that came to the United States, my grandmother and her aunt. Okay. And the rest of the family is still there. So when I started doing the research, I just, and her name is a very uncommon name. It's Piramalo.
Okay.
Because it's from a noble family, there aren't a lot. And everybody who's there are my cousins. So as I was going through Facebook, I started unearthing all of these people and I said, well, this is my, you know, great, great, great grandfather. And they said, yes, we know who that is. And mm-hmm. we were supposed to have a big lunch with 20 of them, third and fourth cousins. And, mm-hmm. you know, like I said, hopefully we'll be able to do that. But it's interesting with my dad's family because the Sorrentinos were fairly well off in Naples. Mm-hmm. Like I said, my grandmother comes from two noble families, one much more noble than the other. And the lesser noble family has kind of embraced the American cousin. Okay. But the Cracciolo, which is very ancient family, they're still like, well, we don't know, you know. And even though I sent them birth certificates of my grandmother, my great-grandmother, yeah. they're still not buying into it at 100% yet.
Yeah, well, you can understand. I mean, gosh, I remember when we, you know, we connected with people abroad. And the first time we moved, we were actually followed by that TV show, House Hunters International. So when we went to visit some of my cousins in Lake Como, you know, we told them, just so you know, we're bringing a film crew and da 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 da. And I think they just thought, wow, our very calm, chilled, you know, provincial life has now been blown up by this crazy American cousin who comes and like knocks on the door, and then we hit like hug and everything. And then it's like, wait, tape that again. And then, you know, you come. So we knew them. We had been in contact with them before, but it just cracks me up how, you know, I do think we kind of disrupt, but they, I mean, for the most part, I think they enjoy it. It brings some fun, and the family connection is so strong that they're just so pleased to meet most of the time, right? Maybe on one side, they're still unsure or uncertain for you.
Yeah. And I think they'll come around once we get there. So what are the most amazing things that you found out when doing your research?
You know, there was so much along the way that was fascinating to me. I think one of the most important things for me, because I am, you know, quite a strong, you know, from a business perspective, having women succeed in business, having women succeed and gain equality has always been something important to me. So I admire really strong women, and I had no idea that my great-great-grandmother was this. I knew she had been a midwife, but I didn't realize how well respected she was. And she had been sent to the University of Padua to study and actually learn properly the training for midwives. So that was quite rare. Usually things were passed down through families and so forth. And then when I started hearing more and more stories about her, I was truly fascinated. So during World War I, I found out a story about her, how, you know, the doctor came in the middle of the night and said, I need you to come with me to a birth up in the mountains. And do you have your gun? And she said, I don't need my gun. I have my cross. She was so fiercely Catholic that she was a big woman. She was a very robust woman. And she said, I don't need a gun. I have a cross. That's how strong her faith was. And then I also found out that right before she died, a negligence claim was brought up against her by a husband who was an abusive husband. And when she helped with the birth, the baby and the mother passed away, and a negligence claim was brought. And this, of course, was during the time of Mussolini. He was bringing a lot of new laws in place to encourage births, to make it difficult for women to understand how not to have babies. He wanted the population to grow for the sake of the empire and for the sake of, you know, the ability to have men to fight. And so that actually impacted my great-great-grandmother's death in 1937. So those were the things that really kind of stuck out to me and made me think, I want to go deeper with all of this. And I really want to build a narrative around the lives of all of these women. Oh, and then one last thing. Her husband was a very strong fascist. Someone emailed me a picture of Mussolini and all the faces in the town of the local fascists. And there was Corrado Argenta, my great, great grandfather, the husband of the midwife, on that chart. So you can imagine this woman was married to somebody who is very strong fascist.
Wow, that's something. Yeah, I never knew that about Mussolini, that he was encouraging births to create the empire and all of that. Yeah, certainly an interesting fellow, that Mussolini, that's for sure.
Yes. My book, I mean, this is what my book talks a lot about, the impact of fascism on women. And there's a book by Victoria de Grazia, who is she teaches at Columbia University. And she actually just wrote a new book called The Perfect Fascist, but she talks a lot about how fascism ruled women. And it's unfortunately not talked about much, but I think it needs to be.
Yeah, no, definitely. And, and again, with the midwives, I never knew that. I always thought it was passed along. I didn't realize that they had some sort of formal training. The interesting thing is Padua, yesterday I interviewed Dr. Ferdinand Visco, who okay. got his medical training in Padua.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he's practicing now probably over 50 years. Wow. My cousin also studied in Italy. Mm-hmm. And one of the fascinating things about the differences between Italy and the United States medical school is that everything's an oral test in Italy. So, yeah. you don't sit down and write something and
you got to know it. It's got to be.
Yeah. And Dr. Visco. Yeah. And Dr. Visco said the way they do it is they have three professors and three students at the same time. And they ask each student the same question. And if you're the last one, you have to come up with something that the other two didn't say.
Competitive, very competitive.
Yeah, in Italian, no less. So
there you go. Yeah, University of Padova is an amazing place. It really is. We spent a lot of time there. It's a fascinating place because it was really one of the first universities to bring kind of theory and practice together. And, you know, I think a lot of medicine and medical things came to life through University of Padova when Italy was sort of in the lead of all of that.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah. So I know you had a roadblock with Italian citizenship. Did you have any other, you know, when you were doing your research, anything else that you just couldn't find?
I think one of the biggest things that, so because I was writing biographical fiction and one of the biggest things is the rationale behind, you know, why people did certain things. That's the stuff that you can't find in the record books, or if you go talk to the priest or in the municipio, you can't get that stuff. So you don't know what's going through their heads to say, hey, why did it take you so long to actually be together? Why did you choose to live apart when some of our cousins and all these other people were coming together, just as your cousin? Why did they choose to be apart? Why did one stay behind and others left? It's hard to know their logic and their thinking. And so you have to that's where you have to insert the creativity and the imagination and think, okay, knowing all the facts that I've collected, both, you know, from the family stories and from the books that I've read, what might have been the logic between all of these things? So some of the big roadblocks were exactly that. Why did they choose this? Why did they choose to have this life apart where my great-grandfather was in America for so long and came back every 5 years? But why did it take so long, you know, for them finally to try to be together? And how, you know, why did they get separated for so long in terms of communication? So those are the things that I didn't have the answers. And unfortunately, as these people pass away, and, you know, none of us are getting any younger. When I started writing this book, it was 14 years ago. And now my aunt, who has helped me a lot with the book, she's 86 years old. And, you know, some of the people in Italy who I interviewed have now, you know, gone on. And that's the thing, we're losing this collective knowledge. So that's why I'm so glad to be able to capture it at least now, because in 10 years from now, we're going to have lost so much. So yeah, so I'd say those were some of the other roadblocks.
Yeah. And I know what you mean, because, you know, I've found some things in my research where you, for example, my grandparents, or my great grandparents, his uncle married her aunt.
Okay.
So, you know, yes. You start formulating these things saying, well,
the families start crossing.
They must have maybe they met at a party. Maybe they met at the wedding.
Yeah.
You know, and then they got married. You know, because you try to figure out, well, why did they marry each other? You know, why did they get married? And the same thing with my grandmother. Why did she come to America? And that was really driving me crazy because of the family that she came from, until I discovered that her aunt had come 10 years prior.
Mm-hmm. But then you wonder, is there more to it? You know, did her mother want her to marry somebody and she really wasn't keen on it? So she decided, hey, I'm going to go meet up with, you know, my sister or what have you. You know, I mean, there's always more to it. We just don't know all of that.
Well, my grandfather was in the seminary. And I never met my grandfather. He died very, very young. I was just born. But the story I was always told was that he would say that my grandmother would come past the seminary and flirt with him.
That's really cute.
And then
that's sweet.
My second cousin,
she tempted him out of the priesthood.
Yeah, she's the granddaughter of my oldest uncle. She had to write a paper about her ancestors or something when she was in school, and so she said the real story was that my grandmother's carriage broke down in front of the seminary and my grandfather was standing outside and he helped do whatever repair they needed, and they gave him a ride someplace. And, you know, she, he wasn't in the same class as her. They were well off, but he certainly wasn't in the same class as her. So that, like to your point, mm-hmm. that kind of crossed my mind too, that mm-hmm. there may have been something going on. And I believe by the time my grandparents got married, my my great grandmother had already passed away. She died mm-hmm. at 40. She was very, very young.
Yeah, that's very young.
And she died, I think she was 41 when she passed away. So she probably wasn't even involved in any of that. I was going to ask you if you visited Italy, but we know you have a place there, so that's fabulous.
I keep looking
for some place to buy, but we'll see. I mean, I'm a little bit older, so I don't know if that's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, it's a great place to retire.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. So let's talk about the book. What really prompted you to write the book? And is it just about your family, or is it just about, you know, strong Italian women in general?
What prompted me to write the book was really trying to get the answers to these questions that my grandma left unanswered. And then it first started off as research. And then as I started hearing all these stories, I realized that there was a love story and a story of female resilience within this that I really wanted to create. But I wasn't a writer. So I started, and, you know, I was working full time. And so I started taking writing courses on the weekends and nights and things like that. And in the meantime, doing this research and spending a lot of time with my aunt and with any family members that I could interview that had lived during that time who could answer these questions for me. And so then, you know, through the process of kind of doing the research and hearing all these really charming stories and very, you know, beautiful little details and so forth, it was then that the novel started coming together. And yeah, I mean, the center of it ends up being the story of my great grandmother and my great grandfather, which she is the daughter of a very strong-willed Italian midwife, as I mentioned before. And on the night that that Pietro, the boy that lives very near to them, is moving to America, she has a conversation with him. And she's quite a young girl, and she asks him to bring her back a penny because he's leaving because he wants to, you know, go and make money. So she says, "I want to see one of these American pennies." And, you know, eventually we find out that her brother is also leaving and breaking her mother's heart, leaving to go to America. So she promises her mother to never leave. And little does she know that when Pietro comes back 5 years later, he hasn't forgotten her. And there's interest there. But of course, she's very young and she thinks he's interested in her sister. So we follow this romance sort of, you know, we kind of skip 5 years, and then we kind of skip to the time when they finally meet up again. And ultimately that leads into during the rise of fascism and then into Nazis occupying the town when they lose contact. She loses contact with Pietro and ultimately has to survive and hope to get back and be there with her family to meet with him in America, if it all will work out. So that ended up being the novel, and it will launch on March 8th.
That's great. That's really fascinating. And so where is it going to be for sale? Where would people be able to find it?
So it's actually on pre-order now. So if you want to buy the ebook, it's available on Amazon. The paperback's a little bit sketchy. Sometimes it's available on Amazon. Sometimes it's not for pre-order. So if you're in the States, I would go to bookshop.org, and that way you can select from your local independent bookstore, who obviously they need a lot of support right now. So you can pre-order it there now, or you could do barnesandnoble.com as well. So it's available for pre-order now on all of those channels.
We'll be right back.
Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera, connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com. Oh, great. That's great. Yeah, I mean, I'm in various stages of writing my own. I've bounced back and forth, and it's more probably going to be about, you know, the four families that I come from, because like I said, all my grandparents were or from Italy. And, you know, the big thing with my family is that my mom's family is from poor farmers from Torito. That's family of, you know, more gentrified upper class, whatever you want to call. And certainly in Italy, that never would have happened. They never would have met, mainly because they would have been from different places. But, you know, one of the interesting stories from my uncle, and I really like to work with my cousin on this a little bit more, but my cousin, before my uncle passed away, my youngest cousin spoke with him in Barés and did an interview and recorded all of that. And he had never done anything with it. And when I found out about it, I said, Joey, you have to translate this. You have to make this, you have to let the family see this. This is like our history, you know, things that we never knew before. And so he chronicles, you know, my uncle's life from, you know, 1910 until, I guess, 1950 or so when they actually came to America. And they had to spend 5 years in Canada because even though my, all his parents lived here for years and all his brothers served in the military during World War II, he couldn't just come over.
He couldn't just come over. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, first of all, having those recordings are, those are gifts I have. So for book number two, coming out of all of this, you know, somebody, now my cousins have sent me recordings for another character who was in the book. And so it was obvious that she made these recordings because she probably wanted her story told. So I would say, you know, if that recording is made and you have it, then you have a mission that you've got to get that story told. You're the only one who really can do it because you're the only one who has the desire to do it. So you have to do it.
Yeah. And you know, that between that and, you know, interviewing my oldest cousin who, you know, talked about, you know, when the Americans came and all of that. You know, the interesting thing from that family too was that even within the class structure within Torito, my uncle said that when he wanted to marry my aunt, or he was trying to see my aunt at the time, and her family did not like him because he wasn't, even though they were, you know, still farmers, he wasn't quite the right person for their daughter at the time. And they actually owned a house. My great grandparents owned a house, and, you know, which was something. It's even my cousin said that that was not very usual. But when my uncle came back from the army, things had changed a little bit. Maybe there weren't as many men around. Maybe the daughter was older, whatever the case may be. They gave their blessing. And, you know, my uncle was able to marry my aunt, and, you know, the rest of this history, I guess. but you know, even that class structure within those families, that was amazing to me.
My family was definitely rural, but because of my great-great-grandmother being a midwife, there was something more there. Because, you know, obviously when she would go and bring these babies, then she would get gifts, and usually not paid in money per se, usually paid with a chicken or, you know, something, but it allowed them a slightly better life than everyone else. And certainly, you know, with my great grandfather sending money back, and you could do a lot with that, you know, being able to have somebody in America sending money back, that really made you have more money than those who were around you. So yeah, that meant that you had to take care of those around you, or you had to, you know, everybody was still working incredibly hard. And it's sad because you wonder when you go and visit Italy now, I'm sure you feel like, why would anybody have left here when it's so gorgeous? But life was not easy for them. And I think that's why we're also maybe tied to our roots as well, because, you know, there was something in them that didn't really want to leave, but they didn't have a choice. And somehow I think that maybe gets seated in us a little bit.
And you know, and you have to, you know, you have to think about, you know, the bravery and, you know, there weren't even phones, never mind, you know, video or any of that thing, you know, maybe write a letter once in a while or something like that. But I have one more question for you about the fascism bit, because I've always loved history and fascinated by that. So, Your was it your great grandfather that was the fascist?
Yes.
And so now, what what was his real job, and mm-hmm. did he pay a price after the war?
So he worked at a mill. He worked at a sawmill, but he was older by the time he sort of got involved in things. And he was, at least from the research that I've done, he did not sort of pay any sort of price afterwards. So from the book's perspective, and also based on the research, the actual facts I found out about him, he was quite a loving and jovial man. He really liked to drink, and he really didn't like work all that much, to be honest with you. He was, you know, he really kind of was the guy who was always hanging out at the bar and, you know, really kind of that, you know, a fun guy and a very loving no-no. You know, he loved to take his grandchildren out looking for mushrooms and things like that. So I think he was more caught up in it from the perspective of, at the beginning, it was something that everybody was doing. There was an energy behind it. There was a real bravado behind Mussolini that he got caught up in. And then I think later everyone started seeing that bravado was not going to take them anywhere good. So that whole dream of making Italy great again ended up really destroying Italy and, you know, having Hitler come in and awful atrocities happen. And, you know, eventually, you know, almost a civil war really in Italy, where you had the fascists and the Nazis together against the rest of the Italian people. So, it's scary, but, you know, I think that, unfortunately, when I first started writing this book, it was 2006, and the word fascism was a dusty, gray old word that if I said it, everyone would be like, huh, what's that? And now, 14 years later, it's shocking to see this being part of kind of everyday conversation and things that we're worried about now, 100 years after fascism was really started by Mussolini. So I think the book, in a way, is a little bit of a warning in that sense, because you see how it, over time, it looked like everything was positive for a little bit, and then suddenly you realize, oh boy, we're past the point of no return, and we're actually we actually don't want to go to war, but we actually now don't have a choice because this man has attached us to Hitler. And it's sad. It's really awful how, again, you know, in a large way, women paid the price, because for every one of those deaths that happened in World War II, there was a woman who gave birth to that child, who went through labor, who went through, you know, carrying that child. So for every man who stood up and took a bullet, that there was a mother behind that. And so that's kind of one of the themes of the book. If you think about midwives and you think about, you know, what women do, and even the Virgin Mary, if you're Catholic, which is a big symbol in the book, and also just for Italians, this concept that, and it's a bit provocative, but that women create and men destroy, yet men are the ones that are remembered and women are the ones whose stories go untold. So with this book, my desire is for these women's stories not to go untold, and really to start looking again at, you know, how we get to this place in the first place, and how women have impacted society, and particularly Italian society.
Yeah, you know, and that's a really good point, because, you know, obviously can't speak for other nationalities or things, but, you know, in my family, there were some very, very strong women, you know. My aunts were very, very strong women, and, you know, they, you know, ran the family, you know. And my grandmother, especially my mom's mom, she was a force. I mean, she's still a force.
A force. That's the perfect way to describe it, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, 40 years later, you know, when we post pictures of her or anything, you know, she was the force.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the family, and the women hold the family together. And it's this gentle strength, really, that is maybe stronger than brute strength, right? So I think that we're lucky to be Italian and to have this heritage. And I think the more we can explore it and ensure that we don't forget all the nuances of it and learn more and ask questions as soon as possible, especially of the elderly right now. I think we have a real duty to do that right now with COVID, with maybe not being able to see them, to pick up the phone and call these people and really ask them questions and listen about their lives. I'm glad I did. I wish I had done more.
No, me too. I you know, I always regret the fact that when I was younger, I didn't ask more questions. And, but who, you know, who knew, you know, that was going to, that I would be in this position where I wanted to know more. I mean, I got a lot from some of my older cousins and stuff like that. But, you know, sometimes people ask on Facebook, who would you, you know, who, if you could talk to anybody, who would you talk to? And I was like, my grandmother, my grandfather, you know, that's, you know, I just want to know more about it. And there seems to, everybody I talk to, there seems to be one or two people in the family that have that kind of drive or that kind of calling to find out this kind of stuff. And it's almost, to me, it's almost like my duty to them to find out.
It is your duty. It's your cross to bear. It's a wonderful cross to bear. It's a delightful thing. But yeah, for whatever reason, we were the ones who became interested in it. And you don't know why, but now that it is, it's really your duty and part of your life's purpose, I think, to uncover it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks again for taking the time. This has been fascinating. Everybody buy the book. You see the cover behind Jennifer. So
it's called Under the Light of the Italian Moon. Yep. So inspired by a true story of love and women's resilience during the rise of fascism in World War II. And thank you. Yes, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. I hope you love it. I really hope you see your own family in the book.
I'm sure everybody will. Thanks again.
Thank you.